Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, January 6th, 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is the force that is Gary Whitta.
Good morning to you, Blessing. Happy New Year. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you, Gary Whitta? Happy New Year.
I'm very well, thank you. Very well.
Are you excited about 2021?
I am, actually. I'm very optimistic about 2021. Certainly can't be any worse than what we just went through. You know, the first full year of the new generation, right? Gaming-wise, that's exciting.
Yeah. Speaking of which, the reason I ask, Jordan Maddox wrote in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, out of all that 2021 has to bring with it, what is your scope of how this year will shake out? Any predictions to what might be delayed after the Cyberpunk 2077 debacle? What game do you think will bring the next big boom in gaming, similar to Fall Guys, Among Us, etc.? What announced game do you think has the most potential for Game of the Year this year? There's a lot of questions in there, Gary, but for the overall of it, what are your feelings for gaming in 2021? What do you think is going to be your Game of the Year? What do you think is going to be a big game that people should look out for? All that stuff.
It's January 6th, Blessing. Are we really going to talk about Game of the Year already?
Yeah,
bloody hell. It's a bit early. I mean, I don't know what, I mean, you know, we already know what some of the major, major titles coming out are going to be, right? Breath of the Wild 2, God of War 2, Halo Infinite. We know what the big, big ones are going to be. But, you know, I think what 2020 taught us is that increasingly, you know, the game of the year can come from left field, like Fall Guys, which is my personal game of the year. Hades, who saw that coming, right? That was a lot, that was game of the year for a lot of people. Hades was a big, big hit. Would you have predicted that January 6th of last year? I don't think so. So who the hell knows? Predictions, trying to make these kind of predictions is a mug's game, Blessing. I'm going to stay out of it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really excited for this year because I feel like usually at the beginning of previous years, we could foresee the future, right? Like we could easily be like, okay, 2020 game of the year is probably going to be between Last of Us Part 2 and Cyberpunk. And like, of course, like we didn't see Hades coming. And so that stuff throws an exciting wrench into it. 2021, I think you could easily be like, okay, God of War Ragnarok. But I think most of us think that game's going to get delayed, right? And so like, who knows? Then you have Breath of the Wild 2, which still doesn't technically have a release date. And so that's another one of, we'll see. Overwatch 2 is in there too, which I expect will be 2021. But again, who knows? This year is such, I think, a mystery for quite a few big games, but then quite a few games that we've just been anticipating for a while. And so that's exciting from that standpoint also. In terms of games, like you said, games that we don't necessarily see coming, there are a few indie games that I'm excited for that I don't know, like I can't predict on like a Hades level or like a Fall Guys level because who knows. But there are some indie games that I think could have the chance to be a big thing or be exciting or maybe even reach that Game of the Year level. You know, 12 Minutes is a game that I know a lot of people are looking forward to and are excited for, and that's one that I'm excited for. Kevin, I have a trailer here for a game called She Dreams Elsewhere, which I think I've talked about on shows before. But if you want to play the trailer, you don't have to play it with sound, you just play it as I'm talking. But that's another game that I'm personally excited for. It's a game that is stylized a bit like an Undertale or an Earthbound. It's that type of game. And I've seen it at PAXs before, and I'm very excited about it, very much looking forward to it. There's Stray, which is like kind of a low-key game. It was at that PlayStation presentation that they did in June, and I know a lot of people are excited about that. It's like the cat game that people are looking forward to.
Real quick,
Kevin,
I'm sorry.
Say something?
Yeah, I'm sorry I'm not pulling up the trailer. I'm having some trouble finding the time codes, Doc. So...
That's, oh, okay. It should be like if you're looking at the KFGD doc, it should be like next to She Dreams Elsewhere.
I'm having probably playing the KFGD doc.
Oh, okay.
My like yeah. Sorry.
Oh, take your time.
New Year, same now. Kevin.
And fuck you, Gary.
I am also looking forward to Outriders. I don't know how much you've been keeping up with Outriders.
Remind me which one that is again.
It's the game from the dev People Can Fly. It's a third-person shooter. It seems like a mix between like Gears and Destiny. Has that kind of vibe.
Okay.
Sci-fi, fantasy-looking game. Me and Andy have been very excited about it. Both me and him previewed it last year in like August. And we're both pleasantly surprised by how fun it was. And that's a game that was going to come out in February. Got delayed today. And we'll actually talk about that later in the show. Kevin's pulled up. This is She Dreams Elsewhere I was talking about before.
Sorry about that. It's really, really late.
I know, man. Do your thing, Kevin.
Oh, well, this almost looks like an old ZX Spectrum game or something with the color palette.
Yeah.
Look at that. Very, very retro.
Yeah, black and white with like some cool colors sprinkled in.
Yeah.
Cool style. Again, like reminds me a bit of Earthbound. It reminds me also a bit of Undertale. Has that?
Is it?
That
is it just? Let me ask you a question in general, Blessing. And I don't get me wrong, because I do love it, because I'm from this era. I'm old enough to remember when games actually looked like this, when retro games were just games. Are you not though getting a little bit tired of this retro aesthetic? I kind of feel like it's getting a bit overused at this point. We see it all the time. This kind of faux 8-bit, 16-bit aesthetic. Do you feel like it's a little bit overdone?
I get tired of it in certain contexts. I'm kind of tired of Metroidvanias in that style, because I feel mm-hmm. like we've gotten so many, right? Understandably so, because people love Castlevania, people love Super Metroid, and so I get it. Like, I get why people would want to make that game over and over and over again. I really do enjoy like the RPGs in that style, and so like that I don't have as much of a issue with. Maybe years down the line, once we get like a million more, at that point I'll hit that, but I haven't hit it with that yet. I've been surprised to not see more games take on like the N64 PS1 era style, and like I know that's less enticing because those games kind of look ugly now, and so it's
they it do might be- they, that generation, I say it all the time, the PlayStation 1 and the N64 generation, which was the first generation to really try and kind of make that first kind of tricky leap from 2D into 3D, that's the mm-hmm. generation of games that has aged the least well, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. And like, and so in that sense, I understand why we get more games that are going after the Genesis or Super Nintendo style. But for me, as somebody who grew up with an N64 and absolutely loves that era, there are things about those games, like the Mario 64s and the Banjos and all that stuff, that I think could appeal very well to people nowadays. And like, we get that here and there. Like, we got Yooka-Laylee, we got Hat in Time, we got the Crash Collection and games like that. But I don't know, I kind of want to see like more original takes on that. Like I've wanted to see more people take that idea and make something that feels truly unique, as opposed to, okay, we're going to carbon copy Banjo-Kazooie and put it out again. And so like, as we go, I'm curious to see if we get that same level of, okay, I'm making a game from my childhood, and the people that made the games from their childhood who are making the Super Nintendo games, right, grow up, and now we're getting people who grew up with an X-D4 or with a PS2 and Xbox making games from their childhood that reflect like Time Splitters or Halo or whatever that may be. I think that is an exciting prospect, but I hear what you're saying though, in terms of being a bit tired of that same 8-bit, 16-bit aesthetic.
What's your number one wish for 2021? The predictions are hard, but like, what do you most want to see?
In terms of games, Breath of the Wild 2 mm-hmm. and or Overwatch 2. Like, both of those would be my number one picks for games that I truly want to come out this year. In general, I'd like to see games come out of left field and just surprise us. I think that's a very exciting thing. I'll never forget in 2015, where we got Fallout 4 at E3, and then it came out later in the year. Like, I want to see more of that. I want to see more games kind of come out of nowhere, whether big games or small games, whatever, and kind of take us by surprise, because I think that's like the most exciting thing. Miles Morales last year was super exciting because it kind of came out of left field and none of us were really expecting it, and we got to play it. Same with Demon's Souls. I love that stuff. And so that's kind of what I'm
Yeah, and I think you are going to see more of that. It goes back to what I was saying earlier. Like, nobody really saw Fall Guys coming. Nobody saw Hades coming. Certainly not in terms of them making the impact that they did. And I think that's, you know, it's easy to kind of, you know, to me, like God of War 2, Breath of the Wild 2, Overwatch 2 are kind of the least exciting games. Only in, not that they won't be good games, I'm sure they all will be, but in the sense that they are kind of like the most known quantities. Like, we can kind of roughly imagine, like, the shape and the feel of what those games are going to be. They're not going to shock us. Like, when they take the wraps off God of War 2, it's unlikely we're going to go, oh my God, what did they do? This, like, we didn't see this coming. Like, it's going to be more God of War. It's going to be great. It's going to be more of what we already know that we like. Whereas, you know, the things that I enjoy seeing are like, oh my God, what is this? Like, we didn't even know this was coming. Like, the big, like, weird out of left field type surprises. And 2020 had a bunch of those. So I think 2021 is going to continue that tradition. The other thing, by the way, just in terms of predictions, I think we will see this year, and you know, as a proud member of the Kind of Funny X-Cast, which of course will be continuing in 2021, very glad to have delivered that news at the top of the year. We're going to keep going with the X-Cast. I think we will finally get more clarity on this very currently very big unanswered question of like, what does Bethesda look like going forward under the Xbox, under the Microsoft umbrella? You know, which of those titles are going to become Xbox exclusives? You know, there's so many great series under the Bethesda, you know, the ZeniMax umbrella. You know, the Doom games, the Wolfenstein games. You know, Elder Scrolls, obviously. Fallout, on and on it goes. Like, I really want to see what the future, and Bethesda struggled a bit the last year or two. You know, there's big stumbles with Fallout 76, and you know, so it'd be really, really interesting to see what the future of all of those franchises looks like, you know, now that it's under new management, basically.
Well, Gary, we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk a little bit about Respawn and what they got going on in the future, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when you get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, this week's Kind of Funny Games cast is up right now, and we're discussing Best of 2020. Our official Game of the Year episode is on its way next week, so be on the lookout for that on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on podcast services. Thank you to our Patreon producer, Blackjack. Today we're brought to you by ExpressVPN, Honey, and PillPack, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. Five stories today.
A Baker's Dozen!
Starting with our number one. Is Respawn working on a new game? ? This is from Isaac McIntyre at Dixerto. According to a now-removed job listing posted on Respawn's website, the studio is putting together an incubation team to develop a brand new IP or intellectual property. The advertisement calls for a generalist software engineer. The listing has relatively few details on the project itself, besides confirming the title will use new practical technologies to enable, quote, adventuring forever. This may suggest a live, long-term game with ongoing Respawn Entertainment support. Outside of the relatively vague job listing, there's been no official word from the North American studio regarding a new game or series in development. The revelation a new IP is on the way comes just months after Respawn shifted much of their Apex development team to a new studio in Vancouver. At that time, rumors were Respawn was already cooking up a new title in their old Californian locale. The only word then, though, was that it wasn't Titanfall 3. Gary Witta, Respawn Entertainment, working on a new game that's not Titanfall 3. Does that upset you at all?
No. I mean, it certainly doesn't upset me that Respawn is working on a new secret game. Quite the opposite. You know, Respawn is one of the few developers left that has like an absolutely unimpeachable reputation. You know, one of the sad things I think for the last few years is we've seen a lot of developers that, you know, previously we felt could do no wrong, make big stumbles. We were just talking about Bethesda just a moment ago with, you know, Fallout 76 and some of the moves they've made in the last couple of years to kind of ding their otherwise previously flawless reputation as a developer of great games. Blizzard obviously made some big missteps in the last year or two. CD Projekt Red, obviously the latest one to kind of add to that list. Is very, very sad to see that. But Respawn is one of the few left where it's like, man, when's the last time Respawn made a bad game? Have they ever? You know, like that's a really, really good team. And it's one of the few names left in gaming where, like, if you tell me Respawn's making a new game, like, I'm immediately kind of sitting up and taking notice. And if you remember, you know, we were talking about surprises, Blessing. That was one of the great surprises, right? Remember, Apex Legends came out of nowhere. Remember, they just dropped it. Like, oh, here's a new game and it's free. And it's really good, and people love that. So let's have some more of that. I'm a Titanfall fan. I never played Titanfall 2, which I know is a big mistake, and I'm supposed to play it. I know. I'm going to play. They tell me the campaign is great. I'm sure if I had played Titanfall 2, I would be more upset that Titanfall 3 wasn't coming, because I don't know anyone who played Titanfall 2 and didn't love it. I think it's on Game Pass, man. I got really no excuse. I gotta go grab it. So. Yeah, I mean, I'm just excited that Respawn's working on anything. You know, that's a really, really great team that they have over there. I mean, you know, even they even broke the kind of the gaming Star Wars curse, right? They had struggled to kind of get a good new Star Wars game out of the gate under the new kind of Disney regime and that EA deal. And Jedi Fallen Order was the first one that kind of broke that curse. Oh, wow, this is a really, really good game. So I'm excited to see anything that Respawn does, basically. Titanfall or not.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. Respawn is a very talented developer, and I played Titanfall 2. I really enjoyed that campaign. It doesn't surprise me that they're not working on Titanfall 3. One, because obviously, like, Titanfall 2 kind of got screwed in terms of sales because of the way that it was positioned up against games like Battlefield and Call of Duty. But then also, with the success of Apex Legends, if they're going to work on something that is going to be iterative of an IP that they already own and work with, I would imagine that they're going to work on an Apex Legends game, which would, in theory, be in the Titanfall universe, and so that all could line up. I wouldn't be surprised if they have, if they make a new game that is either like Apex colon something or something else that is entirely new that is a part of that entire universe, because it seems like they have something special going on with that. Like, Titanfall, awesome. Like, they killed it. They did it. Apex, amazing. Like, they did it. They've killed it. Or like killed it as in like they've done well, not like killed it as in like they've done away with it. They got something so good going with that universe that I think they could build up to something interesting. If they did want to do another campaign, like, what does that look like the world that they've set up?
I'm not an Apex Legends player, but I really like the aesthetic and I really like the characters that they've created. It seems like they created a good universe and they've done a lot of good world building. But the nature of the game, which is this, you know, kind of very iterative, you know, recycle, you know, battle royale shooter, doesn't really allow them to explore the mythology very much. So maybe if there was, like, you know, some kind of Apex Legends spin-off game that was more, you know, story-based, like with a campaign or something, that would be cool.
Yeah, and they mentioned the job listing mentioned the idea of adventuring forever, which lends itself to something that is like a live service game, and so maybe it could be a Destiny, you know, it could be a Sea of Thieves, even though I don't know if that fits with how Respawn works as a studio, but it could be that, you know, like, I think either way, it speaks to something exciting. Respawn, you're exactly right, that Respawn, I don't think, has had a miss. I didn't play the Medal of Honor VR game, but I assume it was fine. I assume it was good. I haven't heard many people talk about it. But, like, aside from that, right, like, Titanfall 1, Titanfall 2, Apex, Jedi Fallen Order have all had people flock to it and really enjoy it.
I mean,
I have no reason to doubt them.
One of the things that the people at Respawn have shown they're really good at, even from their days when they were still, you know, Infinity Ward, before they, you know, kind of became those refugees and restarted their own company, through Titanfall 1 and 2, particularly 2, Jedi Fallen Order, and some of the Call of Duty stuff that does. They're good storytellers. They have a good story department over there. And right now, I feel like it's a bit wasted, you know, because, again, it's the same issue I have with Riot Games. Like, they built this amazing mythology and all these incredible characters for League of Legends, but it's in service of a game that doesn't really allow them to explore that mythology, you know, because you're just constantly battling each other in a multiplayer space. There's not really any story or narrative context, which I, you know, that's not to everyone's preference, but I like story in my games, and I know that Respawn have really, really good chops when it comes to in-game storytelling and world building. So I'd like to see them pursue a game that lets them, you know, flex that a little bit more. I think the Apex Legends universe is really interesting and maybe a good springboard for more storytelling based game.
Well, speaking of new mystery projects, Gary, earlier in the show you mentioned, you know, wondering what Bethesda is going to do now that they're under Microsoft. Story number two: a Dishonored co-creator is working on a new Arcane game. This comes from Jordan Alleman at IGN. Dishonored co-creator Harvey Smith is working on an unannounced new game at Arcane Austin, alongside devs from the Dishonored and Prey teams. Speaking to Vandal and translated by IGN, Smith explained that he had moved back to Austin after completing Dishonored 2 at Arcane's Leon studio, and confirmed that he's not part of the company's next game, but a separate unannounced project. Quote, "I'm not on Deathloop, I'm on something else, working with the guys who made Dishonored and Prey," end quote. Smith makes no further mention of what the project could be, nor how far away it might be. It's possible that it could be a new Dishonored game, but we already know that any sequel to the much-loved immersive sim series would feature new characters after the death of the Outsiders Expand Alone marked the end of the series as we know it. Whatever the game ends up being, it will be a part of the new era of Microsoft-owned Bethesda games, meaning it would almost certainly launch into Game Pass and perhaps even be an Xbox exclusive. Gary, with a host of the Kinda Funny XCast, what is your take on a new Arcane game?
I mean, this is what we're talking about. One of the things that makes me sit up and take notice is like, who's, you know, whether it be a film or a TV show or a book or a comic or a video game, is like, who's making it? Like, you know, what's their pedigree? Have they made stuff in the past that I enjoy? It's like, for example, like if the Coen brothers make a new movie, I'm going. Like, that's all I need to know, right? Is that I don't need to know who's in it or what it's about. I just need to know that those are the guys that made the movie, and I, because I know it's going to be good or at least interesting, and it's going to do something different, and I'm going to, you know, really appreciate it. I feel the same way about games. There are certain developers out there where if I hear that this person or that person or this team or that team is making a game, I'm already interested based on what I know they've done in the past. And, you know, Arcane has emerged as a studio that does really, you know, interesting and different cool stuff. So yeah, again, you tell me they're working on a new game, you already have my attention. I'm leaning in right away for sure.
Yeah, I think this is super exciting. Deathloop is one of my most anticipated games of this year, and Arcane, they have a proven track record with Dishonored especially. And the idea that they're working on multiple projects, right? Like, which isn't crazy, because I believe it was Arcane that did Prey also. And so like they've had that, and they've done that before, right, where they have multiple projects going at the same time. So that alone is exciting. The idea that we're getting new Arcane projects under this new Microsoft-owned Bethesda has me curious to see what that does to the future of the studio and for all the Bethesda studios in general. Like, I know they've had interviews and talks and stuff, and where they've talked about how Microsoft has talked about how, yeah, we're not meddling too much with how Bethesda does things. Like, the Bethesda studios are still operating pretty much as Bethesda studios. I do wonder, though, how that feeds into, one, Game Pass, how that feeds into also like them possibly being exclusive, and what it does to scope, and if they feel any incentive to, hey, you know, we're under this new first party, let's scope up, because we only have to focus on the Xbox platform along with PC. And what does that do to their games? Very exciting stuff. Very into it.
Yeah, like I said, all this stuff will come into greater focus in 2021, so that's what I'm here for.
Story number three, could Xbox be considering adding DualSense features? This is from Jordan Olliman at IGN. A survey sent to owners of the next-gen Xbox consoles is querying whether users would appreciate the features of the PS5's DualSense in their Series X or S controller. As reported by TechRadar, the console experience survey asks owners whether they think the Xbox Series X, quote, feels next gen, and later asked whether they feel like they are missing out in the peripherals department. Quote, I am aware of features on PlayStation controllers, and I wish we're on the controller that came with this console. The question reads. This is, of course, referring to the PlayStation 5's DualSense, which offers adaptive triggers for simulating resistance and provides precise haptic feedback with the goal of increasing immersion in games. By comparison, the Series X controller wasn't too much of a jump from the last generation, despite the addition of features like a dedicated share button and textured triggers. Microsoft's interest in these questions would suggest that they're at least thinking about upgrading the next-gen controllers in the future to line up with Sony's offering in the current generation. While that line of thought doesn't necessarily promise changes in the future, Xbox has a recent history of adding well-received features on other consoles, console controllers to its own. The Xbox controller adopted a 3.5mm jack partway through the last generation, for example. Gary, does the idea of Xbox adding in quote-unquote DualSense features into their own controllers excite you at all?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I don't think it's likely to happen anytime soon, because that's not just something you could patch in with a firmware update, right? I presume that would have to be a new model of controller, because it's specific hardware in the DualSense that's allowing it to do those things. I will say this, and I'll say, you know, even as part of the Xbox side of the Kinda Funny empire, I think that when it comes to the controller, there's a lot that's very similar between the Series X and the PlayStation 5. they both got mostly the same games. They've both got mostly the same power. They both offer mostly the same features. When it comes to the controller, I think Sony flat out beat Microsoft this round. I think that the Xbox Series X controller is a terrific controller. I love it. But the reason why I love it is because I liked the last controller as well. And it basically is the last controller. It was a small evolution of the last gen controller, but it's still basically a last gen controller. The DualSense is a next gen controller, and it really feels like one. The microphone, the speaker, I know that the PS4 had some of that as well, but the microphone, the speaker, and particularly, I don't know what you call it, I guess they call it DualSense or like HD Rumble or
haptic feedback, the
haptic stuff is when my wife and my daughter and I all play Sackboy together, three players, if you played Sackboy, but it makes tremendous use of those DualSense features, like when you pop little bubbles and things out, you know, you get a real high definition sense of what's happening in the game based on how the controller feels in your hand, as opposed to, you know, outside of that, on whether it be really is just Xbox now, because the Switch does this as well. The Joy-Cons have these same features. Remember that thing where you could like rattle the ice cubes in a glass with the Joy-Con and it really felt like that? They have that great stuff. The Xbox, I think, as much as I love Xbox, and I think Series X is a great system, and the controller is a great controller, it's stuck. It's still stuck in kind of the caveman age of Rumble. It's basically it basically just vibrates or buzzes, you know, to different levels of kind of aggression. So, this is a really aggressive rumble, or this is a very light rumble. But it really is just rumble. There's not really any definition to it. The DualSense rumble really feels like the controller's doing something. It's like, man, it really feels like it's responding to you. And this is, you know, we've all seen, like, you know, the pulling back on the triggers. Now the different guns in Cold War have, you know, different trigger pulls and things like that. And you know, the tension on pulling back an arrow and all these things that we've seen. And we're just at the beginning, I think, of seeing game designers really exploit that stuff. I think that Microsoft privately is probably kicking themselves a little bit that Sony really kind of leapfrogged them on the controller this generation. And maybe there will be an opportunity halfway through this generation, not right away because it's too early, but at some point down the road, maybe a new Elite controller or some kind of a more advanced controller that will bridge that gap between the current Xbox controller and the current PlayStation controller, because there is a gap. I think that the biggest thing that Sony did this year was a massive improvement in the controller. For me personally, I never liked the DualShock 4, but I really like the DualSense controller a lot, and a big part of it is that rumble, and I think it makes the Xbox controller now look quite primitive by comparison. Again, I still love the Xbox controller, but they didn't really do that much with it. And Sony showed that when you add next gen features to a console, the controller is part of that experience. And I don't think Microsoft put a ton of thought into the controller this year. They just this is already a great controller, already a great controller. What do we really need to do? It was interesting to see these kind of two different philosophies, you know, evolution on the Microsoft side. Let's just, you know, we'll just tweak it. We'll add a share button. We'll add a couple of little minor features, but it's basically the same thing, versus revolution on the Sony side. So we're going to rethink this controller from the ground up. And I really like what Sony did with that controller. What do you think?
I think this is 1000% going to happen. I think Microsoft, the methodology in terms of what their controllers look like this time around, I think came down to, on the Xbox side, them going, well, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Like, people love the Xbox One controller. I really dig the Xbox One controller. I think it feels amazing in your hand. And like the small upgrades they added to the Xbox controller, being that textured grip and the share button, you know, even though feel very iterative, I can understand the mindset of, this is good enough. You know, we don't want to fuck around with something that works so well. On the PlayStation side, it does feel like a case of, we're jumping into next gen. What does innovation look like? And for PlayStation, that did involve the controller. And I think this, it's an exciting back and forth, because there are cases of companies going for things with controllers, for example, right? That do toe that line of, okay, is this going to be innovative or is this going to be a gimmick? And with the PS4 controller, there are quite a few features that I look at and I go, okay, well, that's gimmicky. Like, the touchpad for me is a gimmicky addition to the PlayStation 4 controller.
Yeah, and you can always tell that. Like, it felt like a gimmick from the beginning, and I think what really demonstrated that is, like, how much does it get used? If you think about the DS3, remember the six-axis? Nobody really wanted that shit. Like, game developers really struggled to find a way to make it work. Just in the same way that a lot of game developers struggled to really make the Wiimote you know, work in their games in a way that actually kind of enhanced the gameplay experience and didn't feel gimmicky. Yeah. When the DS4 came out, the touchpad felt the same way, and you see that now at the end of the day, at the end of the PlayStation 4 generation, that touchpad was mostly used by game developers as just another button, right? Click the touchpad to bring up the map or whatever.
Yeah,
the really fancy stuff like drawing on it, like no one ever really used that shit.
Yeah, you know, it was used by PlayStation first party and in slight cases, right, and not used much past that. And these things are always fascinating because you don't really know what features are going to get used until they get put out there. And so I understand the thinking of, okay, a touchpad in the controller, you know, it has potential. I think it was The Witcher 3 where you could swipe up on the touchpad and that would bring up your map, or you can swipe different directions and that would have different commands. And I think right. That stuff had really cool potential. It just didn't get used in a way
even that though is the fancy D-pad, right? That's all that is. And I think the difference is that with something like the touchpad, the struggle is that, you know, you get this feature and now developers have to think, how can we get gamers to use this feature? As opposed to what they did with the DS5, which is just stuff that's happening too. It's like, well, like it's just like when you pull a trigger, how do we make that existing experience better, right? And so
yeah.
I think in terms of what I would like, my ideal, I can just tell you what my ideal controller would be. Whether or not Microsoft's going to give me this, I don't know. But my dream controller would be the exact form factor of the Series X controller, but with the DualSense features, the microphone, the speaker, and the kind of the haptic rumble and the adaptive triggers and that stuff. Like I said, you ain't broke, don't fix it. You don't have to change anything that's already there, but just add that extra functionality, and that would be terrific.
But yeah, like that, I think that's what's interesting. That's what's exciting about the whole, like, you know, gimmick versus innovation, where like the share button also is one that got adopted by Xbox and was on the Switch controller also. And the PS5, I think, is a big, big example of, okay, like these are features that are innovative. Like the adaptive triggers are being used and people love them. The haptic feedback is being used and people love it. And yeah, like for those, I definitely think you're going to get what you want, Gary, where enough developers are seeing value in implementing those features that, you know, for a future Xbox controller, why not? Like, this seems like the future of Rumble, haptic feedback. That seems like the future of it. Adaptive triggers seem like the future of where triggers are going to be. And so I think you're going to get that 100%.
Yeah, and again, I think internally, if Microsoft are being honest with themselves, if you're looking at like a point-by-point comparison of the PlayStation 5 versus the next-gen Xboxes, the S and the X, and if Microsoft's saying, okay, where does Sony have us beat right now? Like, where do we need to bridge that gap? Yeah, they totally one up them on the controller. I know this is a point of contention between me and Mike. Snowbike Mike and I don't agree. Like, he doesn't like the PlayStation 5 controller. And again, it's to everyone's preference. There are things I don't like about it. I still prefer offset sticks, which is why I still ultimately prefer the Xbox One controller. And I still don't like the kind of very smooth feel that I prefer that rough, grippy feel that the Xbox controller has over the very smooth, comparatively, feel that the DualSense controller has. But you can't, I don't think there's any argument that the PlayStation, that the DualSense isn't a more advanced controller than the Series X one. It clearly is. And I think Microsoft are looking at that thinking, where do we need to bridge the gap, you know, mid-generation? Because we always see these refreshes, right? Whether it be a Pro or a One X or a more, or an Elite controller or a slim model of a console. Like, the generation is not locked in place once the first version of the hardware is released. You're going to see this generation evolve. And I would love to see an evolution of the Series X controller to, you know, kind of copycat some of the DualSense stuff that Sony's done.
My one request for the PS5 controller, because I think the DualSense is perfect, I want a version of the controller with color added to the buttons. Because I get what they're going for with like the futuristic look. Like, yeah, it looks like something that I picked up from Detroit Become Human. But like, if I could get this controller with just like the colors added back in into the PlayStation symbols on the buttons, be perfect. That's all.
Maybe there's got to be someone that will just sell you some stickers.
I mean, there definitely is, but like, stickers I feel like wouldn't be enough for the way that the.
No, you want it actually like baked in, yeah.
Yeah, I want like I want the colors in there. I don't want to like slap a thing on top.
And that's the other thing I will give them. I will give Sony credit to this. Like, the DualSense controller looks like a high-tech, futuristic, like something that some futuristic like drone pilot would be using or something. Whereas the Xbox Series X controller, as much as they love it, still basically looks like a toy. It looks like a plastic toy. But the DualSense controller really looks like a cool piece of, you know, next-gen hardware.
Story number four, Outriders is delayed. This comes directly from their Twitter. This morning they tweeted out one of those big old text images that reads like this. Happy New Year. We believe it's important that players get to experience a new IP like Outriders before release. And they underlined before, which I think is very interesting. They should experience a new IP like Outriders before release, so that you can decide for yourselves whether the game is something you wish to pre-order, purchase, or play. For this reason, we're excited to announce that on February 25th, 2021, we'll be publishing a free demo, giving everyone the chance to play the first few hours of the game with all four classes in both single player and co-op, along with seamless migration of your character and progression to the full game. Speaking of which, we've decided to move the release date of Outriders to April 1st, 2021. No joke. We will spend this extra time fine-tuning the game and focusing on delivering a fantastic play experience at launch. Thanks for hanging tight a little longer. We appreciate your patience, the Outrider team. This one I think is interesting. One from both like the fact that it got delayed, which like it was supposed to come out early February. And so cool. Kudos to them. Take the time you need, put out a more polished game, all that stuff. I feel like this is a little bit of a reaction to Cyberpunk, at least in the language of the text image, where they talk about it's important that players should be able to play a game before launch, which I find interesting because I wonder how much more that we're going to get this year and in future years of game developers feeling more encouraged to be like, all right, we're going to hold this thing because, you know, one, we don't want to put out a game that's broken, that's full of bugs and all this stuff. But then also we got to make sure we give people the chance thing or form an opinion or give people a fair shot to like understand how this game is going to be before launch, which is kind of a thing that Cyberpunk truly screwed up with the console versions. And so I think that's interesting also. But yeah, Gary, you said earlier, you're not really too aware of Outriders, correct?
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know enough about it to care either way, whether, you know, that it's been delayed, because it's not on my radar. But I will say in general, you know, the point that you raised, I'll definitely echo that in general. And I said this right after the Cyberpunk debacle first kind of unfolded. I remember saying at the time, like, how smart does Microsoft look now, you know, delaying Halo Infinite? Because that could have been them, you know, if they had tried to rush it out the door, and that would have been 10 times the disaster. But you know, I think the fallout from Cyberpunk debacle, because it was a debacle, has really, really lit a fire under it's basically become this like ultimate case study, object lesson. It's now like the scary ghost story that like developers tell each other like at night, you know. It's like, remember what happened to Cyberpunk, like, don't let that happen to you. It's really, really is like, this is how bad it can be if your highly anticipated game is rushed out the door to meet some kind of arbitrary deadline. I mean, you know, the CD Projekt Red, you know, I mean, their reputation has been permanently damaged. Like, it will never not be a stain on their reputation. We'll be talking about, you know, Cyberpunk and what and reading about what a nightmare that was, and talking about it as a matter of video game history forever, essentially. And they'll never be rid of that. And that's particularly tragic for all the developers that worked on it, you know, for so long, only for this to be the result. And it's a real, real shame. And if any good can come of it, if any good can come from the Cyberpunk catastrophe, it's that it will now really, really scare developers and publishers and show them just how bad it can be if you release your game. And we've seen it before, but we've never seen it as bad as this, where the game was so highly anticipated and the fallout was so, so great because they fucked up and released a version of the game that they knew wasn't ready you know, for public consumption. Don't let it happen to you, developers. Don't let it happen to you. And I think that's, and I think if anything, it might hopefully kind of stem this very unpleasant trend of games being, you know, shipped to hit a deadline rather than, you know, when they're ready. I hope, you know, we unfortunately have a tendency to often take the wrong lessons from history, but I hope we take the right one this time, and that this will be the beginning of the end of a trend of games being released in an unfinished form, because we're all sick of it. We're sick of it, Blessing. And I think that we saw that happen. The fact that Cyberpunk was like the most anticipated game, and we ended up being so disappointed by the state in which it released, that it came off the back of so many other games shipping in these kind of unfinished states. And this was like kind of finally the straw that broke the camel's back. And gamers as a community were like, enough of this shit. And so hopefully we'll see. It'll definitely happen again. But, you know, the most we can hope for is it'll happen a lot less.
Do you think there's a chance of a No Man's Sky style comeback for Cyberpunk, where 5 years from now we're all talking about the game like it is the best thing since sliced bread? You know, where they like CD Projekt Red fixes all the bugs, adds expansions, adds multiplayer, adds all the content that I'm sure they already have planned for their roadmap, and it becomes an entirely new and refreshed game. Do you think there's a chance that we regain that trust in CD Projekt Red in a way that we talk about No Man's, I forget the name of the dev, but we talk about No Man's Sky now, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if No Man's Sky is the analogy that I would use in this particular case. I do take your point, though, and I do think, and I've said it before, that because, you know, they can't afford it. They can't afford this Hello to Games, not be the case. You. Hello Games is a developer, but for CD Projekt, absolutely Cyberpunk will 100% get to a point where everyone's happy. You know, the next gen, I don't know if the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox, like the base versions, will ever be good. And I think, honestly, they should never have released them. They should have just said this is a next gen game and just forgot about, you know, I know it's a big install base, and again, that's what led them to get greedy and release a game that clearly wasn't capable of running on those platforms, at least not with the amount of development time they had put in. My prediction is, I don't think the base PlayStation 4 and Xbox One versions will ever get to a place where they're satisfactory. But I think the next gen versions will be good. And I think the PC version, which is already very good, will continue to get fixed. And yeah, like a year from now, I think, and ongoing, I think the legacy of Cyberpunk will be, yeah, it's a great game now, but woof, that launch. Like, and that will always be a part of the narrative, but it will get to a point that I think where people are like, yes, this is now the game that it should have been on day one. And at that point, I will jump in. That's why I've been hesitant to play. Even though I've got a good PC, I still see people playing on PC having all kinds of problems with bugs and hitches and things like that and weird glitches. So I'm going to wait until the game is like really, really solid. And then, you know, whether that's with the next gen console version or the PC version getting a few more patches, at that point, I will jump in. I think if you're looking for a No Man's Sky analogy, the better one might be Anthem, which wasn't just like, it wasn't like, oh, with Anthem, like it's clearly a great game there. It just wasn't ready. It's like, it was a mess, like just fundamentally, foundationally a mess. But now they've brought that back inside. Now they're saying, okay, we're gonna kind of 2.0 this game. We're gonna kind of reboot it from the ground up. If there's a No Man's Sky salvation story waiting to happen in the next year or two, I think Anthem is the best candidate. We'll see. I hope so. Again, we love a good redemption narrative, Blessing. We love to see people, you know, come back from the dead and, you know, people picking themselves up off the canvas. That's what we want to see. And we ultimately want games to be good. Like, none of us really, I mean, I think some people do, and it's sad, but I certainly don't. I don't think anyone at Kinda Funny takes any kind of pleasure in seeing, you know, like games like Anthem and Cyberpunk come out and be a big mess. Like, it makes good news, you know, for people to, it sparks a lot of conversation. It gets us talking. It's good for clicks and all that kind of stuff. So maybe some people in the media, it, you know, relish these kind of, you know, stories where games and developers blow up and really make big mistakes. Like Cyberpunk probably drove more clicks in the last couple of months as a catastrophe than it would have done had it been like a resounding success, right? Because people love these horror stories. But as gamers, nobody wants to see bad games come out. I want to see good games come out. Nothing would make me happier than BioWare to bring Anthem back out. And now it's fantastic. You know what I mean? Like, wouldn't that be great? Like, everyone loved that No Man's Sky redemption story. So, you know, maybe there's a chance. Maybe there's a chance.
Gary, I want to talk to you about story number 5. But before I do, I want to tell you about our sponsor. Of course, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily is brought to you by ExpressVPN. How did you choose which internet service provider to use? The sad thing is, most of us have very little choice because ISPs operate like monopolies in the region they serve. They then use this monopoly power to take advantage of customers, data caps, streaming throttles, the list goes on. But worst of all, many ISPs log your internet activity and sell that data on to other big tech companies or advertisers. To prevent ISPs from seeing our internet activity, Kinda Funny protects its devices with ExpressVPN. So what is ExpressVPN? It's a simple app for your computer or smartphone that encrypts all your network data and tunnels it through a secure VPN server so that your ISP cannot see any of your internet activity. Just think about how much of your life is on the internet. Sadly, every site you visit, video you watch, or message you send gets tracked by your ISPs or other tech giants who can then sell your information for profit. That's the reason I recommend ExpressVPN as the best way to hide your online activity from your ISP. You just download the app, tap one button on your device, and you're protected. And ExpressVPN does all of this without slowing your connection. That's why it's rated the number one VPN service by CNET and Wired. So stop handing over your personal data to ISPs and other tech giants who mine your activity and sell off your information. Protect yourself with the VPN I trust to keep me private online. Visit expressvpn.com/games. That's expressvpn.com/games to get 3 extra months free. Go to expressvpn.com/games right now to learn more. We're also brought to you by Honey. These days, it feels like online shopping is the only shopping we really do. That's where today's sponsor, Honey, comes in. It's the free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and automatically tests them when you're checking out. Here's how it works. You get Honey on your computer for free in 2 easy clicks. Then, when you're checking out on one of its over 30,000 supported sites, Honey pops up and all you have to do is click apply coupons. Wait a few seconds as Honey searches for coupons for that site. If Honey finds working codes, it'll apply the best one to your cart. Greg loves this thing and uses it all the time. He saves money on random sites and then turns his Honey credit into Amazon gift cards. Honey has found its over 17 million members over $2 billion in savings. Honey supports all kinds of retailers, from tech and gaming sites to fashion brands and to even food delivery. It's simple. If you have a computer, Honey should be on it. It's free and works with whatever browser you use. You can get Honey for free today at joinhoney.com/games. That's joinhoney.com/games so they know we sent you. Thanks, Honey, for supporting today's episode. Lastly, we're brought to you by Amazon Pharmacy. Chances are you use Amazon, but have you used Amazon Pharmacy yet? That's right, prescriptions delivered to your door by Amazon, just like the TP and Funko Pops you're probably already ordering. It saves you time and keeps you out of the waiting in line at the pharmacy. It's easy. Have your doctor's office send your next prescription straight to Amazon Pharmacy. You can use your insurance. Amazon Pharmacy works with most insurance plans nationwide. Amazon Prime members get free 2-day delivery and save on prescription medication when paying without insurance. Tim needed some medication over the break. He used Amazon Pharmacy, and he says it's easy as all hell. Amazon Prime members can save on prescription medication when not using insurance and get free 2-day delivery. Learn more at amazon.com/gamesrx. That's amazon.com/gamesrx. amazon.com/gamesrx. Last story. Story number 5, Netflix for 3DS and Wii U is shutting down. This is Tom Phillips at Eurogamer. Netflix will discontinue its service for both 3DS and Wii U on June 30th. The streaming giant has now removed its app from being available to download on both older Nintendo consoles though Nintendo support websites states Netflix will continue to function on those platforms until the above date if you have the app already. Which leads me to the question, Gary, where is Netflix on Switch? Why is it not there?
What is up with that?
I don't know. Hulu's been there since 2017.
I mean, I get Netflix on my fucking toothbrush, blessing. Like, what is going on? It's on everything. It's on your fridge. It's on your watch. You know, it's everywhere.
Dude, this news is going to directly affect my mom.
And they have Hulu, so we know that Netflix, we know that Nintendo isn't against the idea of having media apps on there, because there's Hulu on there. I think it might be one of other two things as well. But yeah, like when you think about it, given how ubiquitous things like Netflix and like Disney Plus is another good one to think about, because that's everywhere now. That's already like in every household. And given that the Switch is so ubiquitous, feels like it would be a win-win, right? Netflix and Disney Plus and these places would want to be on all these devices. And Switch would want to have the extra benefit of saying, yeah, you can watch Netflix and Disney Plus here just like you can everywhere else. I know my kid would love it. She watches Hulu on her Switch all the time. I can only assume there's got to be some kind of business hang up. There's some reason why they can't see eye to eye on what the deal would look like to put those apps on the Switch. We see this all the time. Like, you know, there was a thing recently where, like, with Disney Plus, wasn't going to be on Roku devices for a while, and then they find, or HBO Max, like, wasn't going to be on Roku devices, and they figured it out. Like, you can't just decide you're going to stick a device, an app on someone's device. Like, Apple or Roku or Amazon, whoever's like making the device and providing the service, you have to you know, make a deal with them to put the app on their device. And there's some weird hang up going on. I don't know. It'd be fact. I don't know why no one's written a piece about it yet. But you're right that the absence of something as ubiquitous as Netflix on something as ubiquitous as the Switch is a bit of a head scratcher. There's got to be a really interesting reason for it, because it's such a no brainer. Why the reason to not do it has got to be really interesting.
Yeah, Kevin, you said this affects your mom directly.
Yeah, I mean, she has my old Wii U hooked up to her TV, so it's like,
oh no,
I didn't hear the date. But
and like, even that has net. Doesn't even the Wii U has Netflix on it, doesn't it?
Dude, yeah, and she literally. Oh, go for it, Kevin.
She literally, like, it works perfectly because she will watch it on the TV, and then every once in a while she'll flip it to just the Wii U dock, and that's how she watches it. She sits there holding the Wii U dock sometimes with the headphones on because she doesn't want to make noise, and she's gonna be really upset. She's gonna be devastated.
I admire that. The Wii was like one of the biggest platforms for Netflix when Netflix first started making that big push toward digital.
Yeah, I remember getting on every device. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, rest in peace, I guess, to Netflix on Wii U and 3DS. Where is Netflix on Switch? Hopefully we get it eventually. I understand the idea that, like, you have all these devices. Look. And so why do you need it on Switch? But at the same time, it'd be nice if I could switch to Netflix, no pun intended.
It's a portable mobile device with a decent sized screen. To me, it makes perfect. My kid loves watching Hulu on her Switch because she can watch it anywhere, and it's better than watching it on a tiny little phone. And it makes total sense. It's every time I think it, I was literally just thinking about something. Why the hell isn't there Netflix on this thing? Because it's on every other fucking thing. Yeah. It's even on things that make no sense. So why isn't it on a device that makes perfect sense? I don't know.
Gary, I'm very excited to see the day that Netflix eventually makes its way to Switch. But that day is just so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to mom and pop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software on each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Choices That Matter, and They Were Eaten for Switch, Charge Kit for Switch, To Die for Switch, and that's the number 2 spelt out, T-W-O, Die, for PC, and then Billion Beat on Steam. And then one new date for you, Kinetic Edge will launch on Steam for $12.99 on Friday, the 5th of February, 2021. Of course, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can write in, get your questions read on the show, just like Gerard B did. Gerard B writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, after the train wreck that was 2020, I want to pose the question, is the concept of pre-ordering broken? It seems like Cyberpunk 2077 was one of the many games, I'm sadly looking at you, Avengers, who were a little too hyped and saw extremely high pre-order numbers that started over a year out. With so many players already invested in the games before they have seen reviews or news regarding the games closer to launch, it seems being let down or outraged has become the new norm. With the new consoles this year, they put up pre-orders less than 3 months in advance, and it was catastrophic. To this day, so many are still missing out on the next-gen experience. If you were to do pre-ordering, why not simply say in February or March, quote, hey, we're coming out with next-gen consoles later this year around holiday season. It'll cost you this much money. If you want to make sure you get a console, order now before the pre-order deadline of May, end quote. After doing this, adjust the production numbers based on pre-orders and give everyone the chance to pre-order the console. Also, slap some captchas in there to stop the bots. What are your thoughts on the concept of pre-ordering in 2021? Thanks for all you guys do, Gerard B. Gary, is the concept of pre-ordering in video games broken?
Are we talking about hardware or software? Because I feel like those are two different questions.
Gerard B does talk about both in their question. And it is kind of apples and oranges where you talk about software and hardware, because I understand the idea of pre-ordering hardware because you want to be able to make sure that, people get their hands on things, and that is more of a tangible thing that you will run out of. Like, hardware is not unlimited in the way that digital software perhaps is. But yeah, in this case, we're talking about both, and we can start with hardware because I feel like that's a more of a clear situation.
I mean, we talked. I don't know what the solution is, Blessing, and they are two completely different equations. With the hardware, yeah, the issue is there's always going to be a supply constraint. We've seen it every time. I mean, can you even remember the last time there was a hardware launch that wasn't a mess? I mean, it's just we had, like, the smartest people in the corporate world apparently have, you know, from the actual manufacturer all the way to the retailer, have not figured this out. They have not figured out how to beat the bots. They have not figured out how to beat the scalpers. I don't know what the solution is, Blessing. I really don't. The solution might eventually come through cloud gaming and the idea that, you know, buying a box of hardware that goes under your TV in a couple of generations, maybe that goes away. Maybe, you know, maybe Stadia and xCloud finally get to a point, and the internet infrastructure gets to a point where essentially your hardware goes digital, becomes a digital purchase the same way that your software used to. That you're not, you know, there's not a box. You don't go to the store. There's not a physical box showing up, you know, on your doorstep. It's just, you know, your TV, you have this kind of ninja, you know, 10 gigabit internet connection or whatever that is going to allow you to stream, you know, the latest games from some, you know, massively powerful, you know, cloud architecture. And, you know, so there's no hardware, you know, supply constraint anymore. That might be the only solution, because I don't know if there's ever going to be a solution to figuring out how to get physical boxes into the hands of people who really want them and cutting out the scalpers. That's the hardware side.
This last year, I want to speak to that a little bit, because last year especially, I think, presented a very chaotic and interesting situation with COVID and how that limited store sales. Now even PlayStation were like, yeah, we're not having walk-in sales for PS5 at the launch because of COVID and all that stuff to keep people safe. That threw a whole wrench into things that, you know, led to how chaotic PlayStation 5 sales were and Xbox Series X sales were, and that would have been chaotic regardless, right, with COVID or without COVID. In terms of how pre-orders work with that stuff, Jrod B, like, there are so many moving parts in terms of how you order stuff and like how supply works with that stuff. And so, like, when you're pre-ordering, right, like, we all don't pre-order our PlayStations from PlayStation directly. Like, we pre-order from Best Buy or Walmart, or, you know, some of us pre-order from PlayStation, but
I got my Xbox directly from the Microsoft store, and that actually ended up being the best way to do it. Cut out the middleman.
Yeah, and like, in the same for me when I with the PlayStation that I got, that I ended up selling to my roommate, right? Like, I got that from PlayStation. That was a very smooth process. But in terms of how this stuff works, right, like, it is very much supply and demand. Like, pre-ordering for consoles is a way to figure out how many people want these things, and like, basically, it's for companies to make the decision of, all right, how many PlayStations is Walmart going to get from PlayStation so that they can have that supply? And like, how does that cap out? And like, you see pre-orders open up and close, because that is kind of that measure of, okay, how much can we sell and how much does that work? And that is very much like a product of capitalism and how that stuff plays out. And so that's for hardware sales. Software sales, I think, is a more interesting conversation, because I personally, for the most part, don't really see the purpose of pre-ordering games. And I say this as somebody who's pre-ordered a lot of games. Like, before working at Kind of, even while working at Kind of Funny, there have been quite a few games that I pre-ordered because I was very excited for them and because I had trust in them. Like, trust that these games are going to be good because, you know, I know certain developers are talented, or I've been looking forward to this game forever, right? And that's kind of on me as the consumer to be down with that risk, you know, whether or not this game is going to be bad or not. And like, the smart thing in pre-ordering software would be to wait for reviews, and that's the thing that I would suggest for people, like, especially for a big game like Cyberpunk. For in situations where you don't have access to like previews, or you don't have access to console reviews and all this stuff, right, like, I would 100% wait and see what people have to say, or wait for people to get their hands on it and see if this is really something I want to invest in. But at the same time, for us as fans, like, I understand us being impatient and us wanting to have it day one, hour one, minute one, to be able to play it off the bat and have it pre-installed and all this stuff. And so it's kind of a weird balance.
Yeah, look, on the software side's a very different equation, but I thought there's a much easier fix here, at least from the consumer point of view. Don't buy games at launch. Don't buy games at launch. And that sounds like a terrible thing to say, because that would kill the games industry if no one bought games right when they came out. But like, no one's going to listen to me. Like, plenty of people are going to buy games when they came out. But the smart ones, the thinkers like us, like you and me, blessing, the galaxy brains out there, we're going to wait. We're going to wait to see before we make that commitment. And if you want a perfect object lesson, I hate to come back to it again, Cyberpunk. Who saw that coming? Everyone who pre-ordered that game pre-ordered it in pretty strong confidence that game was going to be a banger when it launched. And look what happened. So many people got burned. And then it led to that ridiculous refund catastrophe, which is a catastrophe on top of a catastrophe. Just what a mess. If it can happen to Cyberpunk, it can happen to anyone, anywhere, at any time. Until game developers and game publishers break the habit of shipping games that aren't ready and, you know, need several patches before they're ready to play. So I'm doing the exact same thing with Cyberpunk. I'm not even going near it until it's patched to a point where I know I'm going to have a solid experience with it. Because especially if it's a game I really care about, because I don't want my first experience with a game I'm excited to play to be marred by bugs and performance issues and broken things and the fact that not all the content's fully baked here. I'm going to wait. There's plenty of other games for me to play. I'll get to Cyberpunk when I feel like I'm going to have a really good experience with it. And it's taught us all a very important lesson. And I've been saying this, you go back, you know, watch Kind of Funny over the last year. How many times did I say it to Greg or whoever I was hosted with? Wait, don't buy games at launch, because we have shown, the industry has shown gamers so many times now, over and over and over, that they're not respected, that they can be treated like unpaid beta testers. And that's why you see such a big trade in, you know, retailers offering all these pre-order bonuses, because they need to find a way to mitigate that. They want you to buy the game right at launch. You know, buy this and get an exclusive skin, buy this and get an exclusive fucking steelbook case or whatever the hell it is that they think you want. They really, really want you to buy that game at launch and not wait, because they worry that if you wait a couple of weeks, you know, the bloom will come off the rose, the next exciting game will come along, and maybe you'll forget to go back and get that game. Like, right when the game comes out, that's the moment to sell it to you, even though it's probably when it's actually the worst, like the worst time to buy a game is always right at launch, especially if it's an online game, because I guarantee you the back-end server architecture is not ready. When's the last time you bought a big, big online service game and had a smooth experience on day one? You didn't, because it's never happened. And you know, you've got to wait for the servers to settle down. You've got to wait for them to fix all the issues. And I used to remember, you know, again, before digital distribution became a big thing, buying, like getting your pre-order in for a game early was a big deal, because they were hardware constrained in the sense that there was a physical disc in a box that had to be manufactured and shipped, and you know, GameStop or whoever only had so many copies. And if you didn't get your pre-order in early, you might not get it until the next shipment. I remember trying to buy fucking Punch-Out on the Wii, and I couldn't get it because it was sold out everywhere. And that was the only way you could get it, because there was no digital distribution on the Wii back then. Now, you know, you don't have to worry about, well, how many copies are there going to be at launch? Because there's an infinite number of copies, you know, in digital distribution. Yeah. You can go and get it right away. And you can often get it early. I remember when Animal Crossing came out, we bought physical copies. And we were waiting until like 8 o'clock at night with our noses pressed up against the window, waiting for the UPS truck to show up. People who had ordered it digitally had been playing it for almost 24 hours by then, because they got it at midnight. I'm waiting for like 8 p.m. the next day to get it. So I'm a big fan of digital distribution for that reason. And I do think that and this is why now you see, even on the digital side, them offering all these pre-order bonuses. You know, every retailer does it, every manufacturer does it.
Oh, yeah.
Order this early, we'll give you some extra shit. Because they really, really need you to buy early, because they need to get you in that window. But gamers are waking up to the fact that it's the worst time to buy a game. So I don't know how that's all going to shake out, you know, in the months and years ahead, but you know, I do think hopefully more and more gamers will wise up and just wait a minute before they before they commit their $60 or whatever to buying a game that might be broken, might be shitty. You know, just wait a minute.
Dude, I used to live and die by Best Buy Gamer Club when it was still a thing, because that was 20% off a new game if you pre-ordered it. And I think even if you didn't pre-order it, I think it was just new games, period. And with that, like, I truly, like, understood the idea of, yeah, dude, I'm gonna pre-order this thing just so I can get the deal, and because I'm looking forward to it. And like, I'm definitely with the idea of, hey, if you really want to be sure of a thing, don't pre-order it. Like, wait, like, wait a day after launch, or wait till reviews go up before you commit to buying a thing. I also definitely do understand the idea though of, if The Last of Us Part this year, for example, right? The Last of Us Part 2. I think I had that pre-ordered up until I got hired at Kind of Funny, and I expected that I would get review codes, right? If I wasn't in the situation where I was getting review code, I'm fickle. I probably would have had it pre-ordered. Like, I'm definitely.
I mean, I got a review code for Cyberpunk. I had it day one, and I still haven't touched it. Again, it's not about the, for me, in that case, it's not about the $60. It's about wanting to preserve the integrity of the experience. Again, if it's a game I'm excited about, I don't want my, you know, like, you only get to experience a game for the first time once, right? And so you want that experience to be good. So why would I have a suboptimal experience now, when I could just as easily park it, play some other games, because no shortage of games to play right now, Blessing. In case you haven't noticed, there's a lot of fucking great games out there right now. Everyone's got a backlog. So just wait. You know, I understand people can't do that. Some people are impatient. They got to play the new hotness right now. And if you're in the media, or if you're a streamer, there's an expectation that you're going to be playing the games of the moment, right? You want to play the game that everyone's playing. You want to be a part of the conversation, right? So, you know, whatever the latest game is, you want to be a part of that conversation while everyone's playing it. Or you might want to avoid spoilers. There's all kinds of reasons why you might want to jump on a game right away. But the biggest reason to wait is that what we talked about earlier, increasingly games, the worst time to play a game, if you want to have a good experience, is at launch.
Now it's time to squad up. That Mario Vera, you know him well, writes in and with a squad up on Fortnite and Epic Games and says, "Hello, KF Daily Crew and best friends around the world. I'm looking for people to squad up and help me save the child and reach level 100 in Fortnite. Currently, level 80, the best I've ever done in a battle pass before. If you're still playing this season, I would really like to hang out with more best friends and get some of them sweet victory royales. If you want to squad up with Mario Rivera on Epic Game Store, you can squad up with him with the username That Mario Rivera. That's spelled THATMARIO Rivera, RIVERA on Epic. Get them dubs. Play that Fortnite. Get those victory royales. Have a good time. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Rewrite and listen to what we got wrong as we got it wrong.
What did we get wrong?
See here. I'm not seeing.
I've had a good track record on this recently. Very, very quiet in the you're wrong segment of the last few shows that I've been on.
Dude,
because I'm always right.
This is like the least amount of you're wrongs I've seen.
Because I'm always. You should do the show with me more often, Blessing. You won't get any you're wrongs.
This is shocking. Gary, yeah. You're on point.
I'm on fire. I'm on point. Spitting facts.
I mentioned during the show that I didn't know how Medal of Honor was received. Timmy Buddy wrote in and mentioned that the Medal of Honor VR is very cookie cutter and does have a number of bugs and issues. I played it and the game freezes during most cutscenes, and so
just like what we were talking about.
Yeah. Let's see here. That's not really you're wrong. Ignacio Rojas writes in and talks about how you can swap out the face buttons, like the DualSense face buttons and the DualShock 4 face buttons, which I think is fascinating. I'm not going to do that though.
How would you do that without taking the controller apart?
No, I mean I think that is what you do. You would take the controller apart, which I'm not going to do because I don't trust myself.
That doesn't sound like a good idea.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it for you're wrong. Like, those were the only things, and those were like, I think I was like one year wrong pretty much. And so Gary, me and you, killing it. Genius.
As always, every time. What a combo.
Tomorrow's hosts for the show are me and Tim. If you're watching this live on Twitch, after this is Mike and Greg playing some of that Bloodborne. Will I make an appearance? Probably. I'll probably be there. Maybe the whole time. Stay tuned and see. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.